Hello, operatives. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 9 of Once Upon a Kill Team, the podcast about narrative play in Warhammer 40k Kill Team. I'm Jason, but I'm not Sean. And I want to talk to you about building stories around the gameplay in this grim, dark, terrible universe. In this episode, we explore the amazing solo cooperative narrative kill team system, Acolyte, and are joined by its amazing creator, Rob, known throughout the galaxy as Fodzilla. Welcome, Rob.
Hi, my ears are burning. I'm not Sean either. I'm very happy to be here, though.
No, just to say, Sean is off doing very, very important things elsewhere, but he will be back next episode, better than ever. But I miss you, buddy.
Assuming he survives the grim tasks the Inquisition have given him.
Oh, that's true. There's a galaxy to be saved, and there's only one man who can do it. But I miss my buddy. Anyway, we normally start our show with Hobby Corner. As he's not here, I'll kick off with what Sean has been up to. He has thankfully done his homework and let me know. Now, how about this? He's got an Eversaur assassin, pretty cool enough, that's a Wolfen, that's gone through some Wolverine experiments. How about that? Are you visualizing this model? How does that
just
sound?
Just gluing spikes to everything.
That's my boy. How about an abominable intelligence attack bike as a proxy for the Invader ATV? This is a Death Watch machine. Now, sadly, Sean's not here to show us a work in progress, but I'm just imagining the kitbash he's put into this. Fans of the show will know he's a kitbash obsessive. So,
sounds very Knight Rider. Just little red bits and some spikes coming out the side.
I love Knight Rider back in the 80s. one of the great 80s shows. Rob, what have you been up to?
I am going to risk getting thrown off within the first 5 minutes of the show. Lately, I've mostly been finishing up a Necromunda gang for a campaign we're playing down here in Melbourne. But, so going in, doing each highlights and so on at the moment, I'm not going to hold a mini up to the camera for an audio podcast, but anyone who's on the Battle Brothers Discord or follows me on Instagram may have seen them. And if you're, eagle-eyed, you may notice a few potential kill team operatives in there. So I've been kind of trying to do double duty, making a gang to play a campaign, but at the same time filling out some Inquisition and Star Strider rosters with a few interesting characters there, which has been fun.
Fantastic. No, nothing wrong with Necromunda, by the way. We love the narrative on that, so... You're still on the show.
Yeah, it's a shame about the rules, but, needs must. And I've also been building some terrain lately out of kids' toys, big magnetic tiles. I had a bit of a brainwave playing with my kids and thought, this all looks a bit bulkheady and space hulky. So rather than raiding theirs, I bought myself another box of them and have been gluing them into stackable tiles to try and make a kill team and Necromunda terrain set, which is coming along nicely. So there's a few photos of that floating around as well, which has been fun.
That sounds cool. I must admit, my the thing I'd really like to go to town on more is terrain. That's my top joy probably on the hobby side of things, but I've already got a lot of terrain and I've only got a limited amount of shelf space, so I don't know, one day.
Yeah, storage is a real challenge there, and that's why I'm really enjoying, I'm enjoying this just because it's a fun thing to build, but the modularity of it that the magnets allow mean, it takes space, but once it's built, you can do a lot of things with it. It's a bit more multiplicative, if that's a real word, than
sure.
A box full of more fixed plastic components, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's really important. Oh yeah, my continued sort of mostly hatred with a bit of love for the Into the Dark terrain, which is modular tick.
Yeah.
But so difficult to put together that I find it hard to enjoy.
Yeah, it slows you down. It becomes a hurdle to actually get going. Whereas, yeah, I've been trying really hard with this that you can slot it together in about 2 minutes flat and then slap some ladders on and away you go.
That sounds absolutely great. I'm just really hoping
it works now.
Well, I'm sure it'll be absolutely.
And what have you been up to?
Well, I have done a bit of work on the Chaos Cult team, which I think I've mentioned in about 5 consecutive podcasts. Even my kids, this is one for you.
There's like 30 of them. It takes a while.
It does. Well, also, it doesn't help if you just keep getting slightly distracted by something else. So this is why I generally try to only buy one thing, you know, ahead, project-wise. But after I got delivery of the Void Boys, my Harlequin Void Dancer Troupe proxies, I was just so inspired that I had to just paint them up. So I've had enormous fun painting up my Void Boys troupe. I did contemplate doing them in sort of Harlequin-y colours, but in the end, I just wanted to get my orc on, and I've done them in nice Death Skull blue and Disguise Shredders, as they're now called. I think look pretty nice. I'm really chuffed how they've turned out.
It's camouflage when they come screaming over the top. You look up and all you see is some sort of bright blue thing cannoning towards you.
Yeah, I think someone suggested that the smoke from the jetpacks is the prismatic blur. And
I was actually reading the old Stormboy rules from second edition today. Complete coincidence. And they had a special rule: whenever they trigger the jetpack, you roll the dice. On a 1, it blew up and they died. On a 6, it took off and left the battlefield. But they didn't die. So you got them back in the next game. Right. They were just somewhere else.
Yeah. If you really had Storm Boys in Kill Team, that is the rule that you should have. Absolutely. We should introduce that, really, shouldn't we? But the one hobby issue I had with them is that the models are sort of the third party prints, but they're quite tall. They're kind of really in these fantastic dynamic poses, but they're quite tall, and they're usually standing on some bit of debris. So they're quite tall, but because they're supposed to be on sort of quite small bases, the Harlequins, they sort of fall over really easily. So I had some spare nuts and bolts, some literal human IKEA nuts and bolts that I just glued to the bottom of the base, which has helped a lot. But there's a bit of me that now wonders if the nuts and bolts I had in my drawer should have gone in something. Is there something in my house that hasn't got enough nuts and bolts in it? But anyway,
if you bought it from IKEA, it always has some things that didn't go in there. On a similar tack, I'm a total convert to that. A guy in another Discord recommended gluing washers under bases.
Yeah.
Because they fill out the full width of it. It's like the highest density of weight in there. And I've started doing that, and it just adds a really interesting heft to your pieces. It's not quite like the old metal miniatures, but they just feel a bit more a bit more tactile as you move them around. They don't get knocked quite so easily. So I'm interested, once you start playing with them, to hear if the feel of them makes the game feel a little different to you, because it's such a tactile hobby.
It is. And we'll see. I haven't played them yet, but I'm looking forward to ignoring about half the rules of the game and flying everywhere and hopefully not getting shot. So that sounds like a one for,
not very
one for
orky,
future.
But whatever.
No. But that's me hobby wise. How have you got on gaming? What kind of gaming have you got in lately?
Well, look, apologies again. It's mostly been Necromunda.
It's narrative. It's okay.
Yeah. And, but I don't love Necromunda, it, in the sense that there's 1200, like literally 1200 pages of rules. It's so dense and so much looking up and flipping backwards and forwards and trying to figure things out. Kill Team is a really tight rule set by comparison, but it's the narrative option that's played where I am. So shout out to the Necromunda crew at Axes and Ales in Melbourne, particularly our benevolent overlord Stu, who's our current arbitrator. So I've been playing a fair bit of that, but I'm quite excited. We've got an Acolyte campaign game coming up on Tuesday night with my brothers, so we're finally going to get to the end of our little campaign and see what happens there. So I'm stoked for that.
Nice. Well, my brother Sean also hasn't been playing much Kill Team, but he's also been playing narrative. So he's been playing Big Hammer, the big game that is terrible, but he's been playing the Crusade version. So he's got a Death Watch army. So minus points for not playing Kill Team, but double extra points for playing narrative, which he is really enjoying, I think. And I think it's partly because not that many people play Kill Team where he is. I don't know if this is an issue for yourself as well. But I think he's really enjoying the Crusade battle. And with Death Watch, you can imagine the great backstory you can work through with that.
Yeah, we have a bit of Kill Team here. And there was a narrative campaign last year, but it's mostly the just pick-up games. There's not a lot of continuity, not even a league. So you can get a game in, but if you want that longer-term persistent story building, look elsewhere or do something dumb and write your own game.
Yeah, well, we'll be coming to that later. Now, for myself, I'm very excited. Now, listeners, Wormblade are back, baby. My first true love was the insidious Wormblade Gene Stealer cult. I still love their sneakiness. I love that there's a mysterious broodlord out there controlling them. I love the idea that they naively think that someone's coming to save them. And I haven't played them for a while, but after the last episode, which was our review of Ashes of Faith, if you've not heard that one, go check it out. It's a good one. I immediately after we finished recording, Sal, one of our friends of the show, just said we should start a campaign. So he and I have started a exaction squad, the Space Cops, the Arbites, versus the Wormblade, investigating a suspected, you know, infestation in a hive. So we're three games in, and I've got to say, I'm absolutely loving it. This is so thematic, having the sort of Space Cops against the Wormblade. I'm particularly really chuffed because the Kellamorph is my favourite model in Kill Team, I think. And the way it plays, the combo of looks cool, absolute murderer in the game. Yeah, I think the only down point is, so the exaction squad that we're using are the models that I painted. So it just feels, I don't know if you've had this yourself, but it feels doubly bad when the models you've painted kill your models. I don't know.
Yeah. you should try having your ass kicked by your own rule set.
Oh, God. I hadn't thought about that. That's another level.
There's absolutely no one else to blame.
Anywho, I won't go too
deep
into it.
I love the sound of that. I love the sound of that, though. Because you know where there's, in the grimier corners of the internet, there's, what are our BDs doing in Kill Team? They don't fit. But then you run them up against these other little factions and you find these perfect matches, and it makes for such an amazing thematic game that it allows you to come in at, you know, very different levels of the universe when you get those right matchups to explore little corners of the broader narrative that you don't necessarily get when it's just a stand-up fight between two professional militaries.
Yeah.
That's yet another war zone.
No, and it's and the other thing we've done with this campaign is, so we're doing all the Ashes of Faith rules, but we've not done any spec up rules, not doing spec ops. We don't do XP ignoring all of that. We're not even rolling for casualty tests. We're kind of imagining that behind our respective teams, a whole precinct versus, you know, full of cops and a whole hive full of gene stealers or gene stealer cult members. So we don't roll for casualties. And I've got to say, there's enough admin in Ashes of Faith as it is. So this is perfect. I've got to say, this is just, I feel like I've found my, you know, niche.
It's interesting in that it's a different kind of narrative.
Yeah.
Where the narrative in Stock Kill Team is, I think, a little limited in that, you know, you guys get better and the story you build around them happens in your head. But when you have a campaign that's actually built with narrative in mind and it's chained missions and longer term consequences, then that story emerges and it doesn't really matter what happens with the operatives, that you can just have guys slotting in from wherever, and it gets you over the hump of how come it's the same guys fighting each other over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You'd think, you know, at some point they're going to start recognizing each other and say, "You again." And so, yep. Yeah, there are very different ways of doing narrative gaming. It's nice getting attached to your guys, but getting attached to the story and the faction and the campaign is useful too, or enjoyable too.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to think too much about the idea that somebody just got a supercharged plasma to the chest at virtually point-blank range, and he's all right for the next mission, next week, you know.
Just something about the quality of weapons in the far future leaves something to be desired.
Yeah, well, even the way it's described, well, I shouldn't do that. I feel I'm undermining the narrative here, but even the way a humble lasgun is described in the lore sounds pretty powerful, you know, like better than most real world modern rifles, and yet they're, you know, the flashlight of the 41st millennium or whatever. Anyway, I won't complain too much, but it's a fun campaign. And just to remind people, so the goal of what you're trying to do is control areas. So we've got these six areas of the hive. We've played three games, and in that time we each control two areas of this hive, and that might change because we can control can shift as the campaign goes on. And we're also we can persuade areas and use investigation tokens, and this gives you extra powers. And so we're starting to get these extra elements in, and I'm pretty enthused, and I would almost go as far as say this is my favorite way so far to kind of build that narrative, or favorite so far. We may come onto something later in the episode.
No comment.
The only other thing to bring up that I did try that was quite neat. If anyone's caught the latest White Dwarf, there is in there a kill team. I think they're called Deception Cards. And there's like five or six Deception Cards. To be honest, you don't need to buy White Dwarf. Someone's, you know, you can make your own quite easily, or roll dice for it or something. There's like one little power that it gives you, the way it works, because it's cards, you don't get the same one. There's sort of five or six different ones. Yeah, like very neat, very little, had a small impact on the game, but I quite enjoyed it. I think I would use them in, you know, any game, I think.
They're quite similar to those like Ashes of Faith little benefits that you get as well, where it's like you get a card that can seize the initiative or get an extra attack here or something like that. A little surprise trump card to slot in, which, you know, is a fun little addition to the game.
Yeah. So that was me. I think Sal has won two of the games and I've won one. But the campaign is on, could go either way.
The beauty of that one is, even if you're getting thumped, you can still sneak back at the end and ruin their day.
I plan on ruining his day at the end. Could be the way to go. And I'd go alongside this, just to mention, we haven't got a game in yet, but the campaign I've been running with Sean, which has been we're going through all the Morok narrative missions with Vet Guard and Commandos. How classic is this? We've got our next date booked in for October, so probably in the next episode we should we hopefully can report back on that.
I spent a long time wading through all the Kill Team missions, figuring out what I could make work in Acolyte. And there's some great stuff in there, but I can't help but feel there was a bit of a missed opportunity not to have these narrative arcs in each Kill Team book.
Yeah.
That I mean, they increase in complexity rather than telling a story. And I think you could fit them together really well if you shuffle them up a bit and make, you know, a great 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever mission campaign to play through with the same team one after another and weave that story out of it. So I think there's a lot of potential there, but it takes a bit more legwork to put it together because it's not there to start with.
No, and that is sort of what we're trying to do. We're trying to sort of tell a loose story through those missions. So for instance, in our first four missions, the it's actually gone quite well as a story insofar as the orcs have done pretty well the early doors, but then there was an assault on the central compound that I managed to fight off, so that was good for the story. It means they didn't get overrun, but they couldn't get a message out to get reinforcements. That was quite good. And now the only reason they're not getting overrun is because there's a mica storm coming in, a sandstorm, and so they've got to fight through that, and then we'll see what the result of that is. So we're sort of trying to weave our own kind of consequence into a loose story. But you're right, that's us inventing it, not so much the
I know, and it adds purpose to it, and it's good, and it's like you can have that there as well. They could have put it there, but yeah, priorities and resources.
That was our big complaint when we had our Future of Narrative podcast, I think, stringing things together. But I would say Ashes of Faith does help in that respect.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm going to move us on. We have a mailbag section. So in this week's mailbag, I put out a request on a couple of channels for suggestions. So I've got this Void Boys troop who are orcs, but I thought it'd be funny if we had suggestions for orcified actor names. So these guys are not Harlequins, but they might be acting as orcs. So we've had some suggestions in for orcified actor names. So here goes, and come in if you like or dislike any of these, Rob. So the first one I quite like, Ben Wins at Life from Instagram has said Morco Robbie. Good Australian actor there.
I don't even want to think about what that orc looks like, though.
A bit of lipstick on an orc, maybe. Megaston 47, Jaws Brawlin. Josh Brolin?
Yeah.
Chris Dorker for Wars. Christopher Walken? Maybe.
Maybe.
All right. A friend of the show, Ants, has done some great ones here. He's clearly had a moment that he didn't want to look at his actual job. We've got Gawks and Wells. Yep. Grotta Garbo.
Love that one.
Killian Murphy.
Killian. Sounds the same, but you spell it with a K, it works.
Anthony Grotkins.
I think you need a whole Grot team with these names.
I'd love a Grot team. This one I quite like. Slasher Baron Cohen.
Yeah, love it.
Taylor Slaughter. Now, this one might be my favourite of all of them. Reese Wither Chopper.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Ant. That is absolutely brilliant. Digger Owl. Killam Dafoe.
Love it.
Pretty good. All right. And then SHD Umbra has really gone to town. He's given us low tier, so I'm just going to reel them off, and you can hold up cards with a number or something. Shia LaBeouk.
10.
This is 10. Liam Neeson.
10.
Mork Wahlberg, also known Gorky Mork.
11. That's my favourite of them all. It's fantastic.
Squig Notaro.
He needs his like fat, slightly less famous brother tagging along as well, though.
These are great. Right, my co-host Sean. Kilda Squigton. Okay, Tilda Swinton. Okay, yeah,
Okay. I mean, not exactly an action hero, but you know, we'll run with it.
No, but think of the acting quality.
Yeah.
Gone Blanks. Tom Hanks.
Hmm.
Gone Bruise.
Yeah.
Nico Lash Rage.
I don't mind that one.
Dak Little Gun. Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, now I could say this because he's not here to throw me off the show, but I think it's lucky you've got an audience who chipped in there.
Now, I'd like to defend my co-host on any anyone. Anyway, these were brilliant. Anyone who contributed to that, I am absolutely chuffed. I will be using these. If anyone has seen my models on Instagram, I always write the names on the front of their base, so you'll be seeing these in games coming soon.
And as honorary co-host, I award the Golden Chopper to SHD Umbra, Gorky Mork,
Mork Wahlberg. Yeah, okay, that's in there. If you have anything you want to come into write the show, we're available on onceuponakillteam@gmail.com. You can get us via Instagram at onceuponakillteam. We hang around on various discords, mostly Battle Brothers Tabletop Narrative Channel. Question us there if you fancy any of these. Okay, right, we've done well so far, but here we are. Main topic of the show. Special guest, Rob, known as Fodzilla. You, I have to say, have been on our radar for some time. We love Kill Team. I think you love Kill Team. We love
narrative. I like Kill Team.
You love narrative.
I like narrative. You love
story-driven games. You are a kindred spirit. We feel you're one of us. You're on our kind of, you know, on our ship. However, none of that will mean anything, because I will ruthlessly, of course, throw you off the show if you get a number of questions wrong. Now, obviously, I don't make the rules. They're just there. You know, what can I say? Anyway,
we'll have to start. Rules.
Rules is wrong. Right. So, brace yourself. Hopefully an easy one. Favorite 40K faction?
What I like in 40K is the human stories, the opportunities it gives to put just regular people in horrible situations and see the humanity in them. So for me, it's the factions that stick regular people in, which is, I like the Guard, they're interesting, but in terms of a bit more personality and a bit more individuality, and look, no surprises to anyone, it has to be the Inquisition. I think you get the most interesting, compelling characters there.
Yeah, I think I said on the last podcast, I think the Inquisitor Agent team might be one of the best narrative teams. Like, if you had a bent for storytelling and background and individual operatives, you know, our kind of thing, is hard to beat that one, to be honest.
And I think that one's particularly interesting in the way it's constructed, because there are no superhumans in there. There's not even an Inquisitor in there. It is just these kind of low-level, regular human personalities who, for whatever reason, have found themselves thrown together and dumped in horrible situations, and it forces a narrative upon you to think, well, who are these people and why are they there? It's not like they're a military unit who's been sent here. There's a necessity of narrative.
Yeah, and I'm really glad they didn't try and actually have an Inquisitor in the team. Is that your feeling, or would you sneakily have liked one?
No, I'd like a leader who wasn't quite so much of a damp squib, but I like the idea of the Inquisitor in the background pulling the strings, sending these poor saps out to do his jobs.
Well, listeners, if you like an inquisitorial agent leader who gets better, stay tuned. Now, this next question, this has been the downfall of many a, you know, a guest, so it's easy to trip up on this one. Which Primarch is the coolest?
So, before I answer, to qualify, I've not read any GW fiction published after about 1995.
Okay.
Now, to contrast with my, you know, my love of the human in Warhammer, there's nothing cool about post-human demigod space fascists. And so the coolest among them, I think, is probably the most interesting, which I think is Vulcan, because he really embodies the tragedy of being a demigod, which is, you know, you're glorious and all powerful, and what do you get for that? You horribly die over and over and over and over again. Just gruesome deaths one after another. Which, you know, demigods probably have it coming.
I'm gonna have to give you a pass there. Vulcan, very cool. The quote unquote nice chapter. You know, it's all relative, obviously. No, very good. I like that. That's an easy one to get wrong. I think I'm gonna you've flown through that. That's very good. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, if you have to, which Chaos Skull are you worshipping?
One of my favorite things in the way Rick Priestley wrote 40K is this idea of the Chaos Gods as manifestations of human emotions. And I liked the answer last week of Slaanesh as being about perfection and definitely none of that other stuff. And
I'm not so sure.
Well, look, I'll let that man speak for himself. I think it would be the hope in Siege, the idea that, you know, there's always a possibility for things to change. So I'd probably lean that way. He's the optimistic one.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. I like that. Now I've got a theory that there are two types of people who play kill team. You're either a sneaky player or you're a killy player. Are you sneaky or killy, would you say, predominantly?
I wasn't sure about this until I started playing a lot of games with one of my brothers who is very much a killy player, by which I mean he runs headlong into trouble and we have to dig him out of it. So I think that makes me a sneaky player. I like to think I'm more of a tactical player who, you know, sets up opportunities and then kick the door in and go in and fix everything. But it turns out I'm probably just a coward sneaking around at the back till I see a soft target.
Oh, see, I used the word sneaky, and it might be the word coward as well, because I don't...
Discretion? Avoid getting shot. Discretion is the better part of valor.
Okay. Oh, so I think you might be on Team Sneaky with me. That's fine. Okay, do you have a go-to Space Marine chapter?
So, when I was 12, I loved Space Wolves, but that's because I was 12. and refer to the answer above about space fascists not being cool. But what I really like is there's this concept that I came across in some of the Horus Heresy stuff about black shields, who are Marines who are just like, nah, we've had enough of this. For whatever reason, they nope out, they paint their armor black, they go off and they go guerrilla or they turn pirate. And it's very of that sort of rogue trader era, late 80s conception of 40K, where they are just superhuman jerks in power armor who do what they want some of the time. And I quite like that. So I needed some Marines. I think everyone has to own some Marines. And I painted them up as black shield pirates with sort of mismatched armor, and they're my gang. So I'm gonna take a cop out and say none of them, but it might be any of them.
Don't know. I think that's quite cool. Also, I quite like, I mean, this probably fits into, having them in a potential acolyte game as well. As like a rogue character or something. I quite like
Yeah,
that.
you just a marine washes up somewhere, and you think, what does that do to the power dynamic?
And also, I just feel there could be an interesting backstory for anyone who does that. That could be an interesting tale. Okay,
I think I'm doing okay here.
I think I'm going to pass you. You almost, you wobbled there for a minute by saying Space Wolves. It's interesting how many, by the way, just pick up on one thing you said there. I think Gregor from the Grim Dark Gamers had a similar thing where I think he was an early fan of the Space Wolves, and then as he's matured, he's sort of grown out of them. So I do wonder if there's something in that.
And yet, at the same time, somehow, Space Wolves have gotten even more juvenile over the years.
Okay, right. So we touched on the on terrain earlier, but of all the official terrain sets, do you have a favorite Kill Team terrain set that you like to play on?
I'm gonna
Or
out
maybe just like
myself
the look
here.
of?
I do not own any kill team, like any official kill team terrain. I
Oh,
don't
wow.
never bought any of the boxes. I have the rules, built my own teams, but no. And I've very rarely actually played on it. Generally, we've got a gaming club with a lot of terrain that you can rent, but none of it is, or that you can, what's the word, book. None of it's the official stuff. So you play kind of what's available. And the way I like to play doesn't really, map in with that with those sets, because I'm really into verticality and more complex battlefields. Gamers of a certain age, and I'm outing myself and perhaps you here too, will remember the amazing, almost 2D Mike McVeigh dioramas from White Dwarf in the late 80s and early 90s, where it was like four or five levels of tunnel fighting, of orcs invading a squat stronghold, or Terminators and gene stealers. And I've always loved that image. And so I love playing games that go up and down. And so I'm going to give the same answer I've given every time you've asked me about Kill Team. My favorite Kill Team terrain is Necromunda terrain.
See, I've never actually played a game of Necromunda, but I'm really intrigued by it, and I try to be disciplined and not have too many games I'm trying to play at the same time. But my lack of love for Into the Dark is partly because it's just so annoying to put together. But there is so I think my favourite is probably still Octarius, really. I don't know, I feel like it's very vanilla, but really I just quite I think it. That the interesting up and downs you have to do or going round, it's
Octarius has that mix of different types of terrain, different sizes, different objects, where others are a bit more one-dimensional, and then Into the Dark is literally one-dimensional, or maybe two-dimensional.
I know what you mean. There's not a up and down, which is
Yeah.
ironic, bearing in mind it's sort of in a ship where you it's all up and anyway, let's not dwell on the bad mouthing into the dark. But so yeah, I'm
It
going to
still
give
looks
you.
great.
Oh, yes, it does. That's the shame of it, really. I do like photographing my models with that as background. It looks very nice. But I'm going to give you a big pass on making your own terrain and using non-official terrain, because that's where I'd like to be honest. I think if I had time and space and stuff, I definitely want to make more of my own terrain. That's one of my sort of hobby ambitions going forward. So you get a pass. You've gone through the general questions. You're still on the cast. But will you get through the Kill Team questions? Okay, here we go. What do you like about Kill Team specifically? It's near to Necromunda.
I hate Kill Team. I don't even know why I wrote a whole game based on Kill Team. No, I like it. I like it a lot. I love it. The Kill Team rules. Actually, first, the Kill Team scale is perfect. The size of game, it's quick, it's easy to keep on top of. It creates these really fast and furious firefights because there's not a huge table to navigate around on. But then the way that intersects with the rules is really good. So I'm going to get all dice nerdy for a moment, but it does a few super interesting things. The way shooting and defense is dice pool against dice pool, even though it's a bit more complex, it's a lot quicker because you're not doing multiple sequential rolls. And it provides a really interesting kind of feedback to the player in the sense that something is almost always happening. Even if your lasgun mostly plinks off and you only do 2 damage, you've still done something. You can feel that you're chipping away at people. And then in contrast to that, I think probably the best innovation of Kill Team, because I've not seen this anywhere else, is the back and forth kind of simultaneous melee. You're really slugging into each other. You play other, particularly Games Workshop, but a lot of other games out there, generally melee is completely one way, dependent on a dice roll. Someone gets flattened and the other person comes out unscathed. I like that Kill Team melee, everybody comes out a bit beaten up, and it makes it a really interesting calculated risk, and it means that rubbish little characters can still do important damage in a sacrificial way in melee. They can jump at the superhuman with a bayonet and do just enough to save the guy next to them. And it creates those great little narrative moments where other games where you run at a melee specialist and you bounce off and you die horribly.
No.
Not so compelling.
I know what you mean.
And then I love the order system in Kill Team. I love the engage conceal. It creates this image of choices being made on a battlefield, which and it intersects really well with the rules. And then even we're going to talk a bit about this later, but I think the line of sight and cover system works in conjunction with that.
Okay, I will. You're doing so well. And you had me convinced that Kill Team is a good game. Then you said the line of sight rules are really good.
I said they work.
Oh, you were. I thought you said they work. Yes, they work. Okay. Well, we'll touch. We'll save that bit for the guest questions. But that was good. That was good. So pretty. The GW should definitely put that on an advertisement. What you just said there. That was very good. I agree with pretty much all of that, I think. Yeah, and I've never for one second had any notion of wanting to do big 40K. They're just, not my thing. Okay, do you have a favourite team? You may have answered this, but we'll see. Which is your favourite team to play at the moment, as in a specific Kill Team?
Yeah, my favourite Kill Team is still the first one I built, which is Veteran Guardsmen.
Classic.
I love the feel of these just scrappy, underpowered, completely out of their depth humans running around. But I'm a bit of a masochist in that I love playing 10 Guardsmen and the artillery.
Ooh, okay.
Even though, you know, it's not good, but it's fun. Like the the idea of dudes like hunkering down and calling back and radioing it, and an airstrike comes over the top.
Yep.
And yep. when you line it up and an airstrike comes down, it goes and it wipes out four guys in a row. It's so satisfying. It gives that feel of just a crazy war zone in a way, having the extra bodies to play, you know, a bit more of a territory game.
Do you have a model aircraft that you could bring in for the strafing run? That's what I want.
I just make noises and wave my hands around.
Yeah.
And I built my Guardsman out of some 28mm First World War guys with a bunch of brilliant sci-fi stuff glued to them. And I really, really enjoyed that. That was what completely sold me on kit bashing and building little skirmish teams, because I had so much fun building those. So they are still my true kill team love, that team.
Well, you flying colours on that one. Tick, tick, tick. No problem at all. Do you have a nemesis team? Who do you always lose against?
I don't play enough normal kill team to have a nemesis in a kind of adversarial sense. And one of the other things that I didn't mention but I really like about Kill Team is the sheer breadth of factions. The way GW has used it to drag out all these weird little corners of the universe to make the models that they had concept art, or they had models 20 or 30 years ago, and update little bits here and there. So I'm just happy that every one of them exists.
It is pretty cool. I mean, I feel I have the first world problem complaint of there's too many teams, which isn't really a complaint at all. It's just...
But you don't need them all.
No.
You don't need them all. And if you're playing casually, you don't need to know them all back to front. You just need to play against people who will be upfront and open about their gotchas and their difficult rules.
Yeah.
And what it means is that there's more diversity in what you run up against. So I think it's great that there's a huge amount of options without there being a huge amount of complexity in list building and figuring out how things work. Because, you know, they are still quite simple teams. There's just 30 of them, or however many there are now.
Yeah, I think... I think there's 26 bespoke teams now, not including the compendium. So there's something for everybody, unless you're a Tyranid player, in which case there's not a bespoke team yet. But I'm sure
one of these days will come. Well, we'll say those long overdue compendium updates, they're my nemeses. Get on it, James. You can do it.
All right. So this is the last question. You've managed to get it this far now. Let's hope we don't ruin it on the last one. What's your single favorite operative in the entirety of Kill Team?
So my favorite team is the veteran guardsmen, because they're just conscripts with flak jackets and flashlights.
Yeah.
My favorite though is the spotter, who doesn't even have that. He just has a pair of binoculars and a radio. He is so out of his depth. I love it. He's just like, but he doesn't use it, because it's why would you?
No,
he's got a few tricks, barrage. But it's mostly just panicking and yelling. And, you know, that's what I would be on the battlefield, as far as possible away with my binoculars, hoping for the best.
Okay, that's good. You've particularly wooed me there, because the spotter in my Vetguard team is when I had to sort of kit bash a bit, because I used the Cadian HQ pack.
Yep.
And I've given it a female head, so I think it looks a little bit like the Trunch Ball from Matilda. And so I'm imagining
yelling orders at everybody else.
Mortals now. Well, Rob, you've flown through that. I don't even think there was a wavering element there. You are officially Once Upon a Kill Team guest question alumni now. You can relax. You're through. We have guest questions, but you can't get these wrong. Okay. So, yeah. Welcome to the club.
Thank you. Just a short little intro there, and now we begin.
Now we begin to the really, really good stuff. Right. So why we got you here is you have taken it upon yourself. Clearly, you must have all the time in the world because you have taken Kill Team and you've thought to yourself, what do I do if I don't want to play against someone? Maybe I've got some buddies I want to play with, or maybe, and this could be many of our listeners out there, what if I want to play Kill Team and I don't have anyone to regularly play with? So you have come up with Acolyte, a Kill Team system. Do you want to just briefly talk to our listeners about what it is? What's the concept here?
Sure. So Acolyte is it's a couple of things. What it rests on fundamentally is a really basic AI system, so that Kill Team enemies will play themselves. They have a little decision tree. They look at the game state in the board and they decide, do I shoot a particular target? Do I rush an objective? Do I charge? Do I grab something? Do I stay in cover? Whatever. And it's pretty straightforward. And then built on top of that is, I call it Acolyte, a Kill Team adventure game. It's a narrative, party building, RPG light, campaign-based adventure game. And because of that AI, it's fundamentally designed to be a solo or co-op experience played against not very clever enemies, but a lot of them.
Yep. Yep. That sounds great. That sounds great. And I'd add to that that the we've sort of got listener responses in the past, or I've seen the criticism of Kill Team from some quarters, not from me. I have to say this is not something I worry about. But the you can't really list build very much in Kill Team, or this is very limited. And I was kind of thinking the possibilities for list building, if that's your thing, for Acolyte seem to be pretty broad. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind just going through how does one build a team in Acolyte? What's the setup there?
Yeah, so to start with, I completely understand why they took it out of regular Kill Team, why it became a much more more tightly controlled but interestingly asymmetric options, because at heart they want it to be a balanced, competitive, as much as I dislike the term, game. And I get that, and it works really well. I think the degree of balance in Kill Team is really laudable, even though some people go overboard when a team is slightly over or under-tuned.
Yeah.
They get it right eventually, and most of them they get right enough from the get-go, which is pretty wild. But what you lose, which I think is more important in a narrative than a competitive sense, is that capacity to personalize and make choices about what exactly your dudes are going to look like, how they're going to function. So in Acolyte, the core idea of the game is that you are an inquisitorial acolyte. You are some poor schmuck who's been dragged out of obscurity by an inquisitor who says, yes, he or she are perfect for this horrible, horrible job I have in mind. So you play one of these characters. If you play solo, you have one of them. If you play co-op, you have one each. And they are your player character. They are, you know, a fully fledged Kill Team operative. They skill up, they can access weapons and equipment, but they're also your route into ploys. So you start with one of those and you choose almost a skill tree or a career path, which gives you a starting skill, just a very brief little background idea. Are you ex-military? Are you a smuggler or a rogue trader? Are you someone whose psychic abilities are just starting to blossom? That kind of thing. And that'll put you into a battle on a tree, give you a starting skill, that kind of thing. Alongside that, you get a bank of followers who, presumably because they're poor judges of character, have decided to follow you to their doom. And I wanted to use that to get some of the broader archetypes from Kill Team into the game. So you've got just your regular schmuck with a las gun. You've got a dog. You can have an Ogryn, and then there's one that lets you kind of pull things from the broader Kill Team universe to build your own follower. And I put those in partly for that personalization, but partly also so that you have meaningful choices to make about how you want to approach the challenges within a game. And I've done the same with the way weapons and equipment are put in. In Kill Team, your guy with a las gun will have a las gun forever. He might be able to stick a propulsion amplifier on it, but it's still a las gun. And I think it's because I understand why that works in the base game, but I think if you're writing a new game, you don't want to have eight different classes of character who are functionally identical, but one has a las gun, one has a bolter, one has this, one has that. If you're going to allow more narrative development in characters, you want them to be able to specialize in things or swap things out and make choices based on the moment. And it's narrative. You're going down into the sewers to fight zombies. You're taking a flamethrower. If there's a flamethrower, you're taking it
I took
because you know
one.
you don't know what's down there. So I think I get why it's not in the base game, but it's important, or it's an engaging feature in a narrative game. So I enjoyed thinking about how to put it back in, but without just piling everything in and overwhelming people with choice and complexity.
I think you've certainly got a kind of a good balance for me, I have to say, because the I mean, if you don't mind, I was going to go through my team and my first
Yeah, go
game,
for it.
and you can critique me if you like. This could potentially be fun. So for the listeners, so we I made I think this was a Battle Brothers tabletop hobby challenge where you had to make an inquisitorial agent, and I made one out of a Blood Bowl noble model, and just popped a las gun on it, a las pistol, and I did
He's suspiciously dapper. I think there's Slaanesh
well,
tendencies in there.
I asked our listeners to suggest names, and I've come up with Flash Baptiste is my acolyte. And I went to my good old friend ChatGPT to quickly give him a background. And I'm just going to read the first couple of paragraphs because this just made me laugh out loud when, and by the way, I didn't write any of this. This is out of a computer came up with this. So we've got Flash Baptiste, a flamboyantly dressed inquisitorial acolyte, has a story that is as enigmatic as it is colorful. Born on the grim world of Scintilla in the Calixis sector, his early life was marked by the harsh conditions of the Underhive. As an orphan, he learned to survive by wit, cunning, and a flair for the dramatic. His flamboyant attire, adorned with intricate patterns, bright colors, and jeweled accessories, became his trademark. Flash's appearance was a stark contrast to the drab and utilitarian uniforms of his fellow acolytes. But he always insisted that in the grim, dark galaxy, someone had to bring a touch of style and pizzazz. I don't think I'd heard the word pizzazz for years, but that's what
Certainly not
ChatGPT
in Warhammer 40,000. In the grim darkness of the far future, there is only pizzazz.
Only
I think the
pizzazz.
Auto Hereticus would like a word with him.
So I've said that. So that's the acolyte himself. So that's my main person. But you have a retinue as well. So long-term fans of the show will know that if there is an opportunity for me to have an Ogryn in something, I love an Ogryn. So you, one of the operatives that you can have in your retinue is an Ogryn. So I have got one. Smallweed, the Ogryn that I use in my Blooded team and in my own homebrew Imperial Abhuman team. Yeah, he's sort of the bodyguard of Flash, And then, because I couldn't resist, because I've been playing recently against the RBTs, so I've got a Hiver, but I've gone for the Enforcer background. So I've kind of made this into, this is an Arbites operative that's joined this inquisitorial team. So yeah, I've got this kind of strange, flamboyant acolyte, an Ogryn, who looks pretty grim, from an Imperial Guard background, and an Arbites enforcer. How's this sounding so far?
It's fun, and it's one of the things I wanted to do is write a game where, you know, people who have a bunch of kill teams and they're like, well, I've got all these models, I never use them together. You can pick out your favorites and build a gang or a team out of them. And one thing I didn't mention about the list building, which is, you know, another reason why I wanted to put something like an Ogryn in, the way I balance it is, you've got however many slots to take in your party as a whole and into any given scenario. And so you get into situations where it's like, I'm on really tight numbers. Do I take an Ogryn or do I take multiple guys?
Yeah.
Do I want spread or do I just want a big sack of meat wailing on people? And you know, the answer is normally a big sack of meat.
Don't listen to the nasty man, small weed. He's he didn't mean small mac. Sack of meat.
The emperor loves you and the commissar is very happy about the way you use your big sack of meat.
Yeah, so that's my retinue. So I decided to use. So if any of you guys want to try this, there's three rules. We'll be linking to this in the show notes. And in the basic core rules, you get a suggested little three game campaign to do, which was one I started, and it's called Something Rotten in the Underhive. And I played the first game of this. So the idea is there's a missing fellow agent. In your inquisitorial, wider retinue, and you've got it's like a virtually the first job you're getting independently, is what I'm guessing, or I think that's the way I'm imagining this. And you've got to go find this missing agent and his data slate. Sounds pretty simple job for a couple of fairly low level inquisitorial agents. So I set up my terrain, and lo and behold, pretty much as soon as I get into this environment, some zombies start turning up. And the basic idea of this first mission is you've got six potential clues that you have to uncover. So these are objective markers, increasingly you're going to get more and more zombie operatives turning up that are going to try and interfere with your law abiding search for your colleague. Now
they're going to try and interfere with your jugular,
but quite possibly. Now what a couple of things I just wanted to point out that I really liked, Rob. So one of the things that you've got in this system is you get, if you've got an ordinary deck of playing cards and you have one of, I forget which one's which, but it could have been diamonds was for clues, clubs is events, and another one for loot. I probably got that the wrong way around. But anyway, you have different, and you set up the given number. So when you uncover one of these objective markers, one of the clues, you turn over a card and you look on a table and you see what you found. Have you found the data slate? Have you found the agent that you're looking for, or have you found a zombie that's just appeared out of nowhere?
Rolled over a corpse and it grabbed you.
Certainly did, I could tell you that. And so that's quite fun. But also, because you're flipping over the cards, I've done that one now. I flipped over the zombie. I shouldn't get the zombie again. Or at least not that one. And similarly, at the end of each turn, you generate some more zombies around the board, but you also get an event card, and these are pretty interesting as well. So interesting things happen in the kill zone. And how this game unfolded for me, and I don't know if this is typical, I can't believe how balanced it was, because I, just to plot spoil the ending, I managed to uncover all six objectives, but only just. I had one of my retinue was incapacitated, my enforcer, on turn two or something. My two auxiliary people, so local Planetary Defense Force guys, one of whom did have a flamer, and he flamed a couple of these zombies. They both died. And I, so you've got to undo these clues, and then the game only ends when you're either all dead or you've fled the scene. Now, this is the bit that I'm a bit embarrassed about, is my acolyte couldn't get anywhere near the remaining clues, so he just fled the scene a bit early.
Just get off the board.
Did he flee? Tactical withdrawal? We can argue that one. And then he left.
He was yelling at the Ogryn from somewhere out of frame.
Well, this is it.
Narrative, right?
It is. He left it to Smallweed and one of these poor PDF guys to get the last two clues.
He didn't want to get any blood on his uniform.
That's right.
I just want to touch on the cards for a moment. So, a big inspiration for Acolyte is a game called Rangers of Shadow Deep, by a guy called Joe McCulloch, who also wrote Stargrave and Frostgrave. And it's a very similar kind of model of a basic AI and some cards that shape things. But I really liked how the cards work, so I use them for more things in Acolyte. There's multiple different decks. And one of the reasons for that is the AI is intentionally very simple. I don't want to say stupid, but very single-minded. Generally, it will just try to murder you, but it'll try to murder you in different ways. So you've got a melee AI, like an attacking ranged AI, and sort of a sniper heavy weapon AI. And I looked at a lot of different AI systems, and a lot of them are super complex, very situational, or they have a degree of randomness baked into them, and it makes it, more complex, but much, much slower to play. And so I wanted to keep it really simple, but keep a bit of unpredictability in the game. And so that random draw is really important, I think, in having it unfold in unpredictable ways. You never know when someone's going to spawn on what you thought was your safe board edge, or the power's going to go out, or a building's going to collapse. Or, there are good things that can happen too. You can have a sudden flash of inspiration. And so, I think... To a spoiler, degree,
I didn't have a sudden inspiration. I had more zombies appearing in my face.
Yeah. you maybe got a little lucky that it felt perfectly balanced, but that is, there's a lot of playtesting that goes into this. Yeah. That is the mean. Yeah. There will be, because of that randomness, there'll be missions where you get what you need first up and that's it. You're done. You're out of there. There will be missions where you never find it. I don't know what it is. I always seem to find what I need on the very last objective when I've been beaten to a pulp already.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I found the data slate in the second clue that I found, and then Carter, my RBT's trooper, got immediately killed, and he dropped the slate. So I never got the slate back.
Are you saying someone got Carter?
Oh my God, I don't think I even thought about that. Yes, he got Carter. And then I found the Acolyte body, not a spoiler, on the last clue. So that was, and then I just about, my Ogryn was down to like a 3 wounds or something. He just about got off a board edge after finding that. So I don't know. Mm. Yeah, I've only played one game of this, but it genuinely... I'm a big believer in, the best games come down to like the last dice roll or the last turn or could go either way. And so even when I lose in those situations, I kind of thought, oh, that was good. It could have. So I've got to say this one, possibly with a good degree of luck, worked out for me. I have to say, it worked out in the satisfying game sense, as well as it was just quite fun. So, I'll come up with my conclusions in a bit. Anyway, I just wanted to go through my first game, and I am stoked to go into my second one. So, good going.
I'm really
so
glad
far.
To hear it. We have a Battle Reports channel on the Acolyte Discord, and I love reading people's reports of their adventures, because they're getting a bit of narrative in there, but also just feeling how much people are enjoying something I created is a really spectacular feeling. So I love to hear it. It's great.
Good. Well, you got one more. You got a champion in me. So there's another thing. Whilst we're giving you loads of plaudits, there's another thing that I think that is absolutely brilliant, and I want to be introduced into proper Kill Team. It is your suggested alternative for the rule on obscuring. So, listeners out there, how many of you feel you've got a total and utter grasp on obscuring rule in Kill Team? And do you always, how good's your non-reciprocal shooting, all of that kind of good or bad stuff? If you know it, it's a great advantage, and if you don't know it's a great disadvantage. But the system that Robbers suggested, I think, is much better. Do you want to talk us through it? Because I think this is the system we should have.
Well, first I'll say I don't mind obscuring in regular Kill Team. I think it's written appallingly. Like that part of the rule book is just dense. And if you hang around in Kill Team Discords or on Reddit, like most of the questions from new players are, how the hell does this work? I do not understand this whatsoever. But if you take that out of regular Kill Team, you fundamentally change the game because it's such a precise, millimeter perfect game of positioning. Because obscuring and non-reciprocal shooting and cover and whatever are such a fundamental part of it. So I'd be hesitant to say, I've solved it. Let's change Kill Team. I think it makes it a different game. But what I found is, I've written a game not just for Kill Team players. And I was, talking to people from Necromunda groups, from the broader sort of Inquisitory scene. I don't know if you know the Inquisitor RPG from like 2000, and that kind of spawned this stream of narrative gamers, but without a game like this. So my game is kind of like, they call it Inquisitor 28, but for beginners. And so I had people coming in who didn't have a Kill Team background and were like, what the hell is this obscuring rule? And so I thought, put in an optional alternative where every bit of terrain you shoot past makes someone slightly harder to hit. Either they're in cover, or if it's further than that, -1 to hit, -1 on your ballistic skill. And so functionally, you're going to get to a point where you're shooting through so much terrain that someone is obscured in the classic Kill Team sense and you can't shoot them. But it's a much more simple and intuitive way of getting there. And
That's the word I would think of. It was
yeah.
really intuitively easy to work it out for me, but maybe I'm
And
just
I took
not
a
right.
few opportunities like that to tweak things. I didn't want to fundamentally change the game because then you're writing your own rules and it gets a lot more
Oh
complex.
yeah,
But you
sure.
also don't have the I don't want to say the captive audience, but the base knowledge of people like, I know Kill Team, I like Kill Team, I can play a Kill Team game. So I just made a few tweaks around the edges. One of them was obscuring. I made Fusillade actually do something, which I was quite happy with.
Yeah.
And then I used the list buildy kind of currency basis point system to drag a few weapons back into relevance. Like you never take a flamer over a plasma gun,
No.
but if a flamer is much cheaper, you might. And then the other thing I did, so there's a few little rules tweaks and changes. I dragged guard in as like a regular action rather than a free overwatch,
I really like that.
because you're always outnumbered because of the dumb enemies, and it becomes an interesting tactical choice. Do I do something or do I sit on Overwatch? What do I do? And then, inspired by Necromunda, but in a much simpler fashion, I added setting people on fire and falling off buildings because that's the best part of that game.
Yeah. I mean, it's still my annoyance that I don't get to jump more often in regular Kill Team.
But what if you
Yeah,
could jump and then also fall and hurt yourself?
I'd be the best day of my life.
That's why you need vertical terrain.
Now, here's a question I'm not quite sure on. So I played it solo. I would say as a pretty broad rule of thumb, I am not someone normally attracted to solo games. And I play games mostly because I want to play with people. But I have to say, this was simple enough. And this is, you know, to the credit of the game, that I didn't have to think too much. I really enjoyed myself. So I think I am going to continue with a solo tournament. But I guess my question is this actually best as a co-op game? Or what's your feelings on that? Is that the best place to play this?
For me, wargaming is a fundamentally social exercise. Yeah. It's an excuse to get out of the house and hang out with other humans and roll some dice and talk to them and have a good time. And co-op approaches or constructs that socially in a very different way. That, you know, if you're playing against someone, you have a good time and you roll and things go bad and things go well and somebody wins and someone loses and there's a draw or whatever. But in a co-op game, you're working together to solve a shared problem, which is a different experience. And you share the highs and the lows, where in an adversarial game, one person's high is another person's low. Yeah. And it's like there's sometimes this feels bad or there's commiseration or whatever. But there's co-op's more like a team sport, I suppose, inherently, in that there's also finger pointing and blame and why did you do that? What are you doing? You've ruined this for us. And that's fun too. If you can play, like, I think my favorite games are co-op games because of that social dynamic.
Yeah, yeah.
But once you've got the system there, why not make it solo too? And I've done a lot of solo play testing of this and enjoyed it. And I think that was another incentive to make the enemy movement and enemy decision making as simple as possible. As you said, to make it a relatively quick and painless exercise. It's not like you're playing two sides of a chessboard against each other and having to pretend you don't know what's going on or really stewing on the decisions. It's one side plays itself and you get to try and play against an evolving environment. So I don't know, I err to co-op, and I think there's more power in the co-op game. Yeah. But I hope it functions well solo, and I think it does.
It worked for me, but I would be really intrigued to try this with some buddies, actually. I think, like you say, I think we're on the same sort of thing, that I mostly do all of these games, really, because I just quite like hanging out with people, and it's a nice shared experience thing. So, yeah, so I did enjoy it solo, and I plan on continuing my solo campaign, but I would quite like to also have a go with somebody else. So, yeah, we'll see. I'll report back.
As well, the way the progress works is you can kind of drop in and out. You can your progress is costed to a degree, so you can have someone jump in with a base level character, and they'll be able to take more followers than you can because your guys have skilled up a bit. So there is the opportunity there to do both in parallel, or not in parallel, sequentially, with the same characters for you.
That's pretty cool. Right, now, so my buddy Sean has asked the question, what's your acolyte and retinue like? Do you want to go through your own?
Yeah, I have. And I saw the wording of this question, you know, how are they progressing? Are they kicking goals for the Imperium or getting thumped? I've got two. So I've got my playtest crew, which is, I've come around to Arbites as a pronunciation, but I can't say Arbite for one of them. It doesn't sound right. One arbitrator. I have Priam, the arbitrator, her faithful hound Finnig, and some ring-ins from the local militia, who are just absolute crash test dummies. They've been eaten by zombies. They've had sewers collapse in on them. They've become the victims of demonic rituals. They've been eaten. I've got a scenario where you can run into all kinds of different monsters, and they have been eaten by all of those monsters. So they've had a
Don't put
very,
any of
very
this on the
bad
job
time.
advert.
No. I mean, this is why there's constant demand for inquisitorial acolytes, because they have a very short lifespan. But got lucky with their injury rolls. They are technically still alive. And then in a sort of a real campaign that I'm playing with my brothers, we're a few games in, and I don't get to catch up with them too often, so it's been quite slow going, but we've got our campaign finale lined up for Tuesday. I have Phaedra, the psyker, who, this is where I come in as a sneaky player. She spent like pretty much every game so far hiding at the back, doing psychery things, but safely out of harm's way. And she has a loyal squat sidekick, with a flamethrower and a few lasgun guys along for the ride.
Oh,
And
cool.
they're doing all right, while the killy fighty players rush forwards and get murdered.
Look, I feel I'd be the acolyte standing at the back going, you guys get in there and
Someone has to be in charge, Jason. Someone has to pull the strings and provide the tactical know-how.
look, I'm with you there. That'd be my 40K life, I'm pretty sure. Now, another question from Sean. So what we have at the moment is an inquisitorial agent team. So is there any chance of playing other factions, particularly Xenos ones? Could you be a group of elves, for some Eldar or something?
So, I've had this question from people who, they don't have the models, or they're interested in something else. And you could just change the names on everything and play it as whatever you wanted. There's been some, it's not Xenos, but there's been some really cool homebrew stuff happening on the Discord where people have made a very Mechanicus focused mod for a mod, if you want mods on mods on mods. And there's a really interesting one about a team of Navy Breaches skilling up as they explore a horrible space hulk. So the opportunity is there. In the back of my mind, though, there's a cog turning, because one of the big inspirations for this is the narrative stuff in the really old Realms of Chaos books from the late 80s, Slaves to Darkness and The Lost and the Damned. They had this wonderful narrative campaign warband progression to Demon Prince or Chaos Spawn system, tacked onto completely impenetrable 80s rules. But I think there would be a wonderful chaotic kill team adventure game where you start as a lone renegade or a cult leader in the sewers or something, and progress. And that's not Xenos, but it's the other side of the coin. And I think that would be great fun. But the amount of work that went into this,
Can you just
I'm
do that
not sure I
again
have that
for
in
something
me
else?
quite yet. Well, I mean, as you said, you've got plenty of time on your hands. This was easy.
Sure.
I
You got
had
kids?
I had
Oh,
a
they
lot
don't
of
take up much time.
Well, I had a lot of time off work with a new baby, and people have been posting on Reddit saying, oh, has anyone got a system to play solo kill team? And every time I'd be like, oh, it'll be easy. How hard can it be? And then finally, I had a bit of time. I had a baby napping. I was at home by myself, and I was like, I'm going to try my hand at this. And I reckon I probably put, if I was working full time on this, 3 or 4 solid weeks into this, added up together over a period of about 6 months. An hour a day or something, typing it up in the evenings and play testing while the baby slept. And it came together, I think, really well, but I don't have that time in my life anymore to put out that weight, or like at the moment. So I'd love to see it. It's not going to be from me anytime soon.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I mean, I you know my partly because I'm playing the playing them in the Ashes of Faith campaign, but I was kind of thinking turning around the story of a group of revolutionary gene stealer cult people trying to take over a world. Wouldn't
Yeah, it'll be great
that
fun.
be great?
And what I will say is the the bones are there.
Yeah,
Like,
yeah.
one of my intentions with Acolyte, as you said, there's a three scenario starter adventure, there's suggested progression, and there's whatever. But I wrote it not as a prescriptive, you must play this way, this campaign, but to try and make a toolkit for narrative, for a different kind of narrative gaming in Kill Team. So the mechanics are there, the structure is there, the how do scenarios work, how do the enemies work, what does progression look like, that's there.
Yeah.
The how do we fit this into a particular faction and a particular campaign can be superimposed on top with much less work, I think. So, you know, the potential is there for people who like this idea but want to play it differently. They want to play Wormblade. They want to play the Red Gobbo and the Revolutionary Grots.
Yeah.
They want to play a Chaos Cult or Elder Pirates or whatever. I think, yeah, that the structure is there. You just need all the work to fill it in.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, the amount you can do with an Inquisitor team just seems boundless, to be honest. So, yeah, stop complaining, people.
Not stop complaining, but but what I did is I wrote the game I wanted to play.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not going to gloss over that it takes work. It takes time and play testing and a lot of stewing on things and things that don't work, dead ends. But I have no formal background in game design. I was only back into the hobby for about 6 or 9 months at the point. I've tried a bunch of different games and nothing really quite scratched the itch. And I thought, what kind of game do I want? And I sat down and I worked, and Kill Team had the system that appealed to me. And I thought, what do you need to make it really tick over as that persistent, evolving, procedural, narrative adventure kind of thing? So if there's something that you want that's not there, write it. And you never know how it's going to go. I sketched up a functioning version of Acolyte and I put it on Reddit for some feedback to say, what do people think? Does this work? And then, you know, woke up the next morning and there's 1,000 likes and people like, where's more? Give me more. Give me more. I said, oh, I've unleashed a monster here. But if there's something, if there's a glaring hole in your gaming, other people are probably missing it too. So,
well, as a lesson for all the listeners here, be the futuristic dystopian world game building that you want to be in the world.
Exactly. What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? I guess the last one, and I don't know if you feel you might feel you've already answered this, but are there any future plans for this system that you've already got in the kind of the works?
Yeah, kind of. I feel like the core game itself is pretty much feature complete. The mechanics function, the progression and the skills and the party building, there's no gaps there. Or if they are, they're minimal things that I need to tweak. There's a few balance issues that I've been meaning to get to. But that works, and I'll keep putting little updates in as interesting new Kill Team stuff gets released if Season 3 ever arrives. But what I want to do and what I'm, you know, tinkering with at the moment, but it's nowhere near complete at the moment, is another adventure. And I think that's, you know, where you go from here. There's two ways to go from here. One is other factions, which is more work than I have in me at the moment. But the other is adventures. And I'd love to see, in the same way, something like Dungeons & Dragons or whatever, you can buy an adventure.
Yes.
You can't sell this stuff because James Workshop will sue us out of existence because we don't own any of it. But I'd love there to be more almost off-the-shelf adventures. And I've got an idea. I've got a few scenarios to fit together with a few more interesting mechanics, like branching outcomes or one scenario impacting the next scenario a bit more, which will probably be Gene Stealer Cult as your opponent, as, you know, another natural fit, and someone not naming names, came up with a really interesting idea for a, you know, a brood lord as a final boss, where you have to engage with the environment rather than with the enemy to do something about him. Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting mechanic that would work really well. So that may get stolen, just like I stole everything else from Games Workshop. And, you know,
homage.
You can join the queue with them to sue me out of existence. I think that would be fun. So
that'd be great.
That may come out at some point. We'll see.
Well, thanks a lot, Rob. Those are amazing. You passed. There wasn't even a quibble on any of those questions. So, you know, I'm not saying you're one of the best guests, but you know, you've put a benchmark in. That's all I'm saying. And if I can also just, you know, say you've won the Battle of the Beards. I've got it's about as long as my beard's been, but you have got a magnificent beard. So it's 1-0 to Rob on beards. But, you know, what can we do? What can we do?
Well, yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed coming on here. I it's really nice to just, you know, sit around and talk Kill Team. It was good.
It's great. I had a lot of fun. If you'd fancy trying this, or you've already tried it and want to just tell us about it, I'm really interested in hearing other people's experiences. We'll be putting links to all of Rob's stuff in the show notes, but there's plenty of resources out there. They're very nice. I printed my core rule book up in a little folder, and I found that quite useful. But it's all available as an online PDF. Yeah, I would go check it out if you want to be playing more Kill Team than you can because you haven't got enough, you know, chums available. I think this is a pretty damn good way of getting your fix. So thanks again, Rob. I'm sure we'll get you back, especially if you start doing more stuff. That sounds amazing.
No pressure.
no pressure. But you got one fan. I'm already on board. Next time on Once Upon a Kill Team, we will be joined by more special guests. We have George and Joe, organisers of the New York Open Kill Team Narrative event that will be taking place on the 4th, 5th November. Sadly, I don't have a ticket for it, but it looks amazing. We'll be quizzing them on how they've set up the event, some of their plans that they have in store for the players, which I have to say look pretty good. If you have any questions you'd like us to put to them on running a narrative tournament, get in touch, onceuponakillteam@gmail.com. If what you heard on this podcast sounds even remotely interesting, subscribe and tell your friends. For every subscription to the podcast, you will receive a special blessing and possibly an extra arm from the benevolent four-armed emperor. If you have a few spare pennies and would like to support the show, you can do so through Ko-fi, Ko-fi. There is a link in the show notes. The podcast will always be free. And any help you give go towards making the podcast better, and we really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us on Once Upon a Kill Team. Just remember, it's not whether you won or lost. It's whether your Exaction Squad Weber operative comes face to helmet with a Wormblade Weber gunner, and somehow they only manage to ineffectually combat each other with gun butts and batons. This happened to me in a recent game. See you next time.